Chapter 32. Robbie Melton waved the printouts from the vehicle checks. "We've picked up the car, sir, on several different occasions. We can pretty well pinpoint the direction he travels in. He always heads towards the east side of town. Uniform have upped their presence in all the residential roads within a 1 mile radius of where he was last caught on camera. Soon he would be face to face with Ashcroft again." Jackman felt it in his bones. There was no doubt that they were drawing closer. Their arch-enemy had made a crucial mistake in not realizing that the Sniper Experience Gun Club had so many CCTV cameras. Then there was his grotesque killing of Larry Turner. The neighbor had verified that Larry's new friend drove a car of the same make and color as the one recorded on those CCTV cameras. Unless he had changed it very recently, it would only be a matter of time before he went through either a police traffic camera or past an eagle-eyed Bobby, or PCSO. Then every traffic car in the area would be after him, blue lights flashing and sirens blazing. Robbie lowered his voice. "I knew Larry Turner, boss, a couple of years before I transferred here. I went on a firearms course and Larry was on it too. He was a good guy. He was dead keen to get into the national team, the target shooting championships and all that. He was pretty obsessive about it. But I guess we all have to have a passion, don't we?"
"Not sure what mine is," murmured Jackman, "other than Laura Archer."
"I reckon it's policing for you, sir. Oh, and horses."
"Horses I can go with, but not the policing part."
Robbie intuited what he was referring to. "Ashcroft can't keep himself hidden for much longer, sir. Our guys on the streets are looking at everyone sideways now, including any iffy-looking women, if you know what I mean." Jackman went back to his office. All his bravado of a few moments ago evaporated as soon as he was alone. Doubts flooded in. Was Ashcroft becoming disorganized? Would this mean they had a better chance of catching him? Or would he instead become a desperate and dangerous loose cannon? And what then? This was no good. In order to give himself something to do, he rang Kevin.
"Jackman here, just checking on how you are."
Kevin said that he was still shaken but felt much better. His parents were treating him like a 5-year-old with the measles, but he was kind of enjoying it. In a few days, he and Alan were driving down to Cornwall for a week in a friend's holiday cottage. "Son, say and vodka, sir, along with Cornish pasties. Alan reckons that should cure anything." Greatly relieved, Jackman phoned Laura, who answered almost immediately.
"Sweetheart, I was just going to ring you. Sam's recovering, and they're no longer concerned about him. Isn't that fantastic?"
And Ruth Crook was amazing. She organized a private room under a false name for security.
"Will you be okay if I stay with him, darling? They've offered me a temporary bed here for the night."
Actually, Jackman didn't want her out of his sight, but being with Sam under heavy police guard would be a damn sight safer than being with him.
"Just keep in touch, won't you?" he said.
"And if anything bothers you..." Laura interrupted him. He wasn't to worry. She was taking no chances at all.
"Boss?" Marie stuck her head around his door. "We're back. Rory is busy at the crime scene, and he said to tell you he'd rather you didn't send him any more like this one. Even he felt queasy."
"I'm not surprised," Jackman grimaced.
He shook his head to rid it of the memory of that corpse, wrapped like a parcel in cling film.
"Now, have you heard from Rachel Lorimer about her son? Is he home yet?"
"Rang her just now, sir. She's much more relaxed. He's not back yet, but she said he'd rung home. He said he'd gone looking for Ashcroft again, but he'd be home by nightfall if he had no luck."
Jackman frowned. This wasn't good news.
"One thing does bother me, boss. When I spoke to Jacob about the horse theft and the other stuff, he told me he never lied. He said his ma had told him to always tell the truth and shame the devil. He's a simple-minded kid, and I think if he said Paul had a gun, then he did have one."
"If he's roaming the streets of Salton hunting for Ashcroft, why haven't any of our foot soldiers picked him up? Every unit out there has his description," Jackman said.
"What's he up to?" murmured Marie.
"I dread to think. But I don't believe his story about getting rat-arsed, do you?"
"You know I don't, sir."
Jackman smiled,
Then his expression became serious. Poor Lorimer needs to be found before nightfall. The man he knew as Ralph Renwick sat back in his chair and slowly applauded.
Well done. As near perfect as we could expect from you, young man.
He was taking the piss, surely. Suddenly Paul had the urge to reach out and strangle this man.
Now, all we have to do is go over the timing again.
Paul gave a sigh. He knew the times, for goodness sake.
Do we have to, Ralph? I've got it all in my head, honestly.
Once more. For the first time, Paul looked this man directly in the eyes. They were heavy-lidded like those of a cat, and as cold. Suddenly he was afraid.
Sure, let's do it.
Good. Now listen to me very carefully. Ralph Renwick ran through the times while Paul repeated them.
Finally, Renwick bent down and whispered in his ear, your acting was very good. But just to give it an edge, remember this. If you mess up, get even one word out of place, this is what will happen to your ma.
Renwick leaned closer until Paul could feel his breath on his cheek and whispered in his ear. Paul gasped.
I won't let you down. I won't.
No, you won't. Because ruin my plans, and I'll ruin your mother. And maybe that pretty sister of yours, too.
Paul's voice cracked.
I won't get it wrong, I promise.
Renwick stood up abruptly, the smile back in place, but the eyes just as hard.
Then this is yours.
He pushed a thick envelope into Paul's hands.
Put on the best show of your life, and then go home and forget everything, understand?
There is enough money there to wipe the last few days from your memory forever.
Is that clear?
All Paul could do was nod, bewildered, understanding nothing. As the shadows lengthened across the fen at close of day, Rachel Lorimer made her way to her daughter's caravan. As ever, Rachel wondered at the way the girl lived, surrounded by heaps of clutter. But by now she'd accepted that Esther wouldn't change.
Is there anything you need to tell me, girl?
She asked softly. Esther lowered her head.
You gave Paul a gun, didn't you?
Esther shook her head slowly.
Didn't give it. He took it. I see.
She gave her only daughter a sad smile.
It's all right, Esther. I just needed to know.
She endeavoured to widen the smile.
And one other thing. A certain item that belonged to your grandfather. Do you have it somewhere in this,
She waved an arm around. Esther looked up.
Are you mad at me, Ma?
No, girl, I'm not mad at you.
She paused for a moment, Esther watching.
There is something I want you to do for me, for all of us. It's to do with your brother Paul.
Sure, Ma. What do you want me to do?
Good girl. Now, I've heard from Paul, and it's like this.
There was an unusual atmosphere in the station that evening. Though their shift had finished some time ago, only now were the team beginning to drift off home. The first to go had been Max, wanting to get back to Rosie and the children, but the others almost had to be thrown out. Now, even though there seemed little point in staying, Jackman, Marie, and Gary sat on, listening to the reports coming in from the streets of Salton-le-Fen. The uniformed officers had narrowed the search for Ashcroft's base to an area roughly half a mile wide. They were now out in force, knocking on doors and requesting to look in outbuildings and garages to try to locate the black Peugeot car that they now knew Ashcroft drove. Every policeman and woman had the license number branded in their memory. Jackman stretched and yawned.
I think it's time we called it a day, or we'll feel like rubbish tomorrow. There's little we can do here, other than wait.
Or in your case, pace up and down. Do you realise you're wearing a track in your office carpet?
Murray said. It was true. He felt uncommonly edgy,
and seemed incapable of sitting down for any length of time.
Jackman, I know this sounds a bit dramatic, but would you like to stay over with us tonight?
Marie looked at him anxiously. You said Laura is staying with Sam at the hospital and Ashcroft knows exactly where you live, doesn't he? I don't think you are safe there alone.
I second that, sir, added Gary. I've been thinking that if he's realizing that the net is tightening, he might want to end the whole thing while he still has the chance.
I've got a sofa bed. It won't take a minute to make it up, Marie said.
We'd feel a lot happier.
It was tempting. Ashcroft had already visited Mill Corner twice.
Please, Jackman?
He wanted to say yes.
I appreciate your offer, really I do, but...
How could he tell her he was half hoping to find Ashcroft lurking in his carport?
One night, sir. I've got toiletries and shaving gear that you can borrow, Gary said.
Before Jackman could answer, his mobile rang. It was an unknown number, and it took a few moments to realize who was speaking. He switched the loudspeaker on.
Calm down, Paul. Now start again, but slowly.
He's got Ma. That man what I thought was Uncle Ezra. You have to help her, you have to.
Paul sounded so frantic it was hard to make out the words.
Tell me what you know, Paul. Where has he taken your mother? Do you know that?
I did it wrong.
Paul was crying now.
He said he'd hurt her, and Esther too, if I got it wrong and I messed up.
Got what wrong? Asked Jackman.
Phone calls. I had to make phone calls, and I got the times wrong. Now he's taken Ma.
Where are you? We'll come and get you.
Jackman spoke calmly.
You can't. He'll be back soon. And if he sees you here, he'll kill her. I know he will.
Tell me where you are, Paul.
He scribbled a note and held it out to Gary. Get location of this call. Gary hurried out.
He's here. I'll try to ring back.
The line went dead. For a moment, Jackman stared at his phone. Then he sprang into action.
Marie, ring Rachel Lorimer now.
Marie pulled out her mobile, rang the number and switched the loudspeaker on.
Hi, Levi. Can I speak to Rachel, please? It's DS Evans and it's urgent.
She's not here, Sergeant. She went out to talk to Esther earlier on, but when I went over to her van, neither of them was there. I'm getting real worried about them.
Jackman's heart sank. So, Ashcroft hadn't finished with the Lorimers after all. Marie asked Levi exactly what time he realized that she had gone, and he said it must have been over 30 minutes before.
And her car's not here, Sergeant. But she never goes out at night. She hates driving these lanes in the dark. Scares her rigid.
Levi, please ring me if she comes back immediately, okay? Meanwhile, we'll do what we can. You and the rest of the family stay put, and an officer will be with you shortly.
Marie ended the call, just as Gary came back in.
Can't specify an address, but the nearest tower gives us a general location of the area where Uniform are searching for Ashcroft's car.
Gary handed Jackman a list of 6 road names.
Inform the duty sergeant of the situation, Gary. Ask him to keep the police presence low-key, but to keep their eyes peeled for any signs of trouble or sightings of Rachel Lorimer or her old 4x4.
Got you, boss.
As Gary turned to go, Marie said,
And ask for a crew to get out to the Lorimer place ASAP. See if they can get a more accurate time for when Rachel left, and get them to keep an eye on those boys. We have no idea how they will react with the mother and sister missing.
Jackman followed the tracks in his carpet, pacing. What to do? With a grunt, he sank down into his chair and pointed to the one on the opposite side of his desk.
Sit, Marie. We need to assess what we really know and how to proceed.
Marie shook her head.
Very little. Just some garbled story from a young man who is behaving totally out of character.
If he was acting, I'd be very surprised, Jackman countered. And if he's telling the truth, we have 2 women in mortal danger. And don't forget they are off the radar at present.
Okay. Let's assume he's telling the truth. Do we think Ashcroft actually abducted them? Or possibly lured them away from the farm?
He thought for a moment.
I'd say the second option. He lured them.
He'd know he couldn't take his car. He could have phoned Rachel and told her that Paul was in trouble or hurt, and she needed to come immediately. Marie nodded slowly. That's quite feasible. Plus, if she hates driving at night, she might well have taken Esther with her. She pulled a face. But then, why not tell the family? She only had to say she was going to collect their brother and none of them would have been worried about her.
Oh, you know Ashcroft, Marie. He could have invented a dozen plausible reasons for not telling anyone.
Very true. But Rachel Lorimer's a law unto herself. She does only what she wants to, always has.
Then maybe Ashcroft knew that and tried a different method, like using Paul himself.
He did say he'd been told to make phone calls, didn't he?
Marie paused, thinking.
So, bottom line, we go with Ashcroft having Rachel and Esther.
We can't afford not to, can we? We just have to hope that either Uniform spots something or Paul manages to ring us back. A few minutes later, Gary returned.
The sergeant understands the situation and has put out an attention drawn to Rachel and her daughter, with the order to proceed in that area with extreme caution.
He turned to Marie.
And two officers are on the way up to the Lorimer farm as we speak.
He looked from her to Jackman.
Do you think we should call the team back in?
Jackman shook his head. No, not yet. There's nothing they can do at the moment. It's a waiting game, I'm afraid. Gary, would you be up for going out and meeting those PCs at the Lorimer place? You know what the Lorimer boys are like. A couple of coppers with no prior dealings with them could inadvertently upset young Jacob, causing Noah to flare up.
Of course, said Gary immediately.
That's a good point, and I'll keep in touch in case they hear anything from the mother. Marie followed Gary out, off to get her and Jackman a drink. Jackman was left alone with his thoughts. Completely out of the blue, he recalled a man named Tyler Kane. Many years ago, he had worked with this rather enigmatic detective, who had held some very unorthodox and unpolicemanlike views. Kane believed firmly in karma, and he and Jackman would sometimes talk well into the night, pitting his rather unworldly ideas against Jackman's materialistic ones. In particular, Jackman recalled Tyler Kane's method of dealing with fear. He could hear him now.
We coppers love an acronym, Jackman, so use this one. Fear. False evidence appearing real. Most of our fears are just a collection of perspectives and self-defense mechanisms dinned into us as kids in order to keep us safe. We go on to inherit fear from others as we proceed through life, but it's something other people teach us. Don't allow your fears to control you, Jackman. See things for what they really are. Recognize them, understand them, and they won't have power over you.
Tyler Kane had died in a high-speed car crash, aged 31, leaving Jackman a priceless legacy of positive thoughts. How amazing that he had thought of him now, just when he needed wise counsel. Marie came back with a mug of tea.
No coffee. My mum says we should drink more tea than coffee, and it's supposed to be good for shock, so here you are.
As she raised her mug, Jackman's mobile rang. They gave each other a long look. Jackman answered. This time Paul Lorimer sounded as if he was speaking with a gun pointed at his head. Maybe he was.
Ralph Renwick wants to speak to you and Sergeant Evans. Alone. It has to be both of you.
Jackman gritted his teeth. So this was it. The showdown.
He says, if you bring anyone else or have any form of backup with you, there will be dire consequences.
Paul had to be reading those words. He wouldn't have a clue about dire consequences.
He also says that if you don't meet him, he will hurt people, lots of them, until you agree to listen to him.
Jackman heard a distinct tremor in his voice.
I'm listening, Paul. Is he there with you now? Can I talk to Mr. Renwick?
Pause.
He's not here.
Jackman didn't believe him for a moment.
Okay, Paul. Where does he want to meet us?
He said you would know where. And if you don't, that pretty PC Stoner certainly would. Bad things have happened there.
Jackman glanced at Marie, the waste ground behind the railway line.
1 hour, or innocent blood will flow. It's your choice, D.I. Jackman.
The line crackled, then went silent.
Jackman lifted his desk phone and asked for immediate triangulation on the last call to his mobile. They waited in silence.
He's still in that original area. It's walking distance from there to the river and the waste ground.
Right. Unnaturally calm, Marie sat and sipped her tea.
It seems right, is what I mean. After all this time, all the horrible damage and destruction he's caused, it's right that it should come down to the three of us.
Jackman stared at her.
Jesus, Marie. Are you honestly thinking of meeting him? On his terms? We'd be mowed down in an instant. Look at the firepower he has.
But wait, she said. He won't just shoot us as soon as he sees us. It's not his way.
He would be compelled to tell us just how powerful he is and what failures we are. Unless he does that, he'll feel that his mission, or whatever it is, has not been fulfilled.
Jackman was impressed.
When did you get a degree in psychology?
When I last spent some time with your Laura.
But what do we do? We can't risk him spotting any backup. If he really does have hostages, and I believe he does, it will be their death sentence.
There will be no other vehicles and no firearm squad. There will be just us.
Marie put down her empty mug.
Oh, and one other. The best sniper we have. They will be concealed in the back of our own vehicle. We walk away from the car and keep Ashcroft's attention on us. The sniper slips out as soon as it's safe to do so and finds a vantage point with a clear line of sight to Ashcroft. One threatening move, and they'll finish him.
It could work, but God, it was risky.
He closed his eyes. Risky, but it would be worth it to put an end to Alistair Ashcroft's reign of terror. His eyes snapped open.
Okay, we'll do it.
He picked up the phone and called the super.
Ruth, I need the very best marksman we have, and one of the most agile. No 6'6" beefcake, please. This one needs to be a veritable lethal shadow, right? We have under an hour, and we have to do this exactly as I say, or innocent people will die. If we do this right, it ends tonight.
After he'd replaced the phone, he jumped up.
Go and get us two of the best Kevlar vests you can rake up. I'll find a car that will suit our purpose best. See you downstairs in 10.
He stopped in the doorway and looked at her, his eyes bright.
You and me, Marie. That's how we wanted it. And that's what he'll get.
You and me, Jackman. Let's go.
You excelled yourself, Paul. You've earned your money.
I had intended you to do another small job with me, but I've changed my mind. Stay here for another half an hour after I've gone, then go home. Your car is in the double garage. Lock it up again when you leave and put the keys on the kitchen table.
Renwick was dressed entirely in black, black shirt, black trousers and boots, and a heavy black body armor vest. On the floor beside him was a helmet. Paul had seen a dozen men like this on the way here, patrolling the streets. When they had gone to the rendezvous site to check it out, Renwick had dressed them both in high-vis jackets with an official-looking logo on the back. With yellow hard hats, they looked for all the world like construction workers from the other side of the river, or highway maintenance men. Renwick had said that the best place to hide was in plain sight, and no one, not even the police, had looked twice at them as they walked by. At the time, Paul had found it exciting, like being in an action movie. He rather liked being a second-in-command, although Ralph Renwick's changes of mood were hard to keep up with. Now Renwick was a police firearms officer. Paul had to hand it to him. He was in plain sight, all right. Now he understood exactly what that meant.
If things go well, Paul, it will be partly down to you, so thank you. I might not see you again, but I will get justice for your uncle. For a moment, Paul thought that Renwick was going to hug him. He mumbled something and backed away. Renwick picked up his helmet.
I've a few more things to collect, and then I'll be leaving.
Remember, 30 minutes, then get out of here. Understand? Paul nodded.
I understand.
Goodbye, Paul Lorimer. Have a nice life.